I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. It was not a trial, but it might have felt like one, to media mogul Rupert Murdoch and his son James. The Murdochs appeared before a British parliamentary committee today. Both denied responsibility for the phone hacking scandal at the now-shuttered News of the World newspaper. Here's a bit of what they had to say today. We begin with James, a senior executive in the Murdoch media empire.
I would like to say as well just how sorry I am and how sorry we are. To particularly the victims of illegal voicemail interceptions and to their families. It's a matter of great regret of mine, my father's, and everyone at News Corporation. And these are standards, these actions do not live up to the standards that our company aspires to everywhere around the world. And it is our determination to both put things right, make sure these things don't happen again, and to be the company that I know we have always aspired to be. As for my comments, Mr. Chairman, and my statement, which I believe was around the closure of the News of the World newspaper.
Before you get to that, I would just like to say one sentence. This is the most humble day of my life.
That's Rupert Murdoch there saying that this is the most humble day of his life. Before him, you heard his son James saying how sorry he is for what has transpired. Journalist Marianne Siegart was watching the hearings today. Marianne, now you're a columnist for The Independent. We want to talk to you about your previous experience with the Times of London, owned by the Murdoch Empire. First, though, the message that James and Rupert Murdoch had today, the apologies, the humility we just heard expressed. What for you is the takeaway of what was said before this committee today?
Well, you could see the work of the PR company Edelman there, couldn't you? They're not the sort of men who normally come full of humility and apology, but I guess that's what they were told they had to say right at the beginning. Overall, the most striking thing about it was how little they were prepared to admit that they knew about what had been going on in their company. The sentence that James Murdoch used perhaps 20 or 30 times was, "I have no knowledge of that," or "I had no knowledge of that." And you think, well, hang on a minute, you were running the company, you were chief executive. Rupert Murdoch is chairman and chief executive of News Corporation. He claimed, for instance, that he had no real contact with the News of the World, which was the newspaper which has been using this phone hacking. He said, "Oh, I only called the editor of the News of the World perhaps once a month." Well, within minutes, Piers Morgan, who had been editor of the News of the World, was tweeting that he used to talk to Rupert Murdoch every week when he was editing the paper. So I think there's a certain amount of hear no evil, see no evil in terms of their strategy. How credible that is, well, I found it hard to believe.
Well, let's look at your own experience with the Murdochs. You used to work for the Times of London, as we said, as an assistant editor and a columnist. Did their depiction, not only of how often you would talk to those in the upper ranks, but the entire depiction of life at their papers and the standards that we heard son James talk about a little while ago, did those depict accurately your life at the paper and jive with your experiences?
They did chime with my experiences at the Times, but the Times is a very, very different newspaper from the News of the World and indeed the Sun. At the Times, we had, as far as I was aware, the highest standards of probity and integrity. And Rupert Murdoch, I mean, I wrote the editorials for the Times, political editorials for many years, and he never told me what I had to write. But I think he, you know, he's admitted that at the Sun and the News of the World, he has much more influence. He does tell the editors what he wants them to say. It's very different.
I want to get back to the hearings now. Rupert Murdoch denied responsibility, as you heard, for the crimes committed, for the illegal interception of voicemail messages, for bribing policemen. Here's one of his answers in response to a question from one of the committee members, Jim Sheridan.
Mr. Murdoch, do you accept that ultimately you are responsible for this whole fiasco?
No.
You're not responsible. Who is responsible?
The people that I trusted to run it, and then maybe the people they trusted.
So what happens once he denies having any responsibilities, you said? One may term it as passing the buck or not, but what happens now in terms of who's proving who culpable?
Well, I mean, unless there's an email trail leading to the desk of Rupert Murdoch, it's going to be hard for the police to charge him with any offence. I suspect there may be email trails leading to the desks of executives just below him. We'll see.
There were a lot of moments of drama today, but one of them was particularly noteworthy. This is when a protester who happened to work his way into the committee room rushed at Mr. Murdoch. What happened then?
Well, it was the most extraordinary sight. I think what he'd done was sprayed some shaving foam onto a paper plate to create the sort of custard pie that clowns use on each other, rushed towards Rupert Murdoch, was intercepted by Wendy Deng, Rupert's wife, who clocked him one over the head, and eventually he was bundled out by the police, put in handcuffs and arrested. But, I mean, it's pretty embarrassing, frankly, for the House of Commons that, you know, we have pretty strict security, so it's very embarrassing for the House of Commons that he should be allowed to have got into the committee room with a paper plate and a can of shaving foam.
Yeah, and it looked like the alleged perpetrator might have gotten hit by more of the shaving cream than Rupert Murdoch, but Rupert Murdoch did to answer more questions after that. But let me ask you, in terms of the questions that are being asked of him, how did he, versus his son, compose himself? And how did he come off before the committee and those watching?
Well, the extraordinary thing is that he is a man who has been feared by much of the Western world, certainly here in the UK, as the most powerful man in the country outside the Prime Minister. And yet he came across as a doddery old man who knew very little about what was going on in his company, who answered lots of questions with a very long pause and then a monosyllabic yes or no. Very, very unimpressive. And it was hard to tell whether he was putting this on, perhaps in order to court sympathy, or whether he is genuinely really quite as old as his age, in which case, why is he chairman and chief executive of a multi-billion dollar company?
Marianne, I wonder, in closing, if you could give us the bigger picture on all that's transpiring here, because it's more than a media story. It's more than a story about journalistic ethics. We had earlier in the day two senior police officers appearing before a different parliamentary committee. We have heard talk of this scandal possibly embroiling the Prime Minister, David Cameron. Can you bring together the various facets of this investigation?
Yes, it's much more than a media story. Our Prime Minister, David Cameron, employed as his communications director the man who was editor of the News of the World when phone hacking was first uncovered. He resigned from being editor of the News of the World because of the phone hacking, but he was then employed by David Cameron, and a lot of people are now questioning David Cameron's judgment about this. Now, the most senior policeman in the country, the head of the Metropolitan Police, employed Andy Coulson's deputy, that was the deputy editor of the News of the World, to give him advice on communications. And then the Metropolitan Police, which he was in charge of, failed to investigate properly the phone hacking at the News of the World. So this scandal has embroiled not just the media, but the government, or at least the conservative part of the government, and the most senior echelons of the police.
Do you think there's a need for the public watching this, especially in Britain, to see News Corp chiefs being put on the spot? Is there anything here that's part of kind of a national catharsis, maybe?
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of people felt that here was a man who wielded an enormous amount of power, but was utterly unaccountable for it. And I think it was satisfying at last to see him being held accountable for what he has or hasn't done.
That's Marianne Seacart, former assistant editor for The Times of London.